Welcome to the Rangers Rundown, the only podcast truly celebrating the most victorious team in baseball, the most successful team in baseball, the greatest team in baseball. Yeah, baby. What happens if you sweep Houston? Yeah, we do it one more time. Oh, yeah, that's enough. That's terrible. I'm sorry. But Houston, what's up? Get swept. Houston's bad. Texas is good. These are facts.
Yes. First team to sweep Houston all season long.
Is that good?
I think that's good. I think the Rangers are actually good.
The Rangers are going to the World Series!
Ooh, I like that idea, is that the Rangers team is at the actually good of the week.
Insert airhorn.mp3.
Yeah. So, for your certificate that you'll do online, what better photo than the photo of them all wearing their rock concert t-shirts tonight? Did you see that?
I was thinking the same thing.
Oh, I missed this.
Yeah, that was what they're doing for their team flight to Arizona. I mean, they had some pretty funny ones.
Cool.
Yeah, Elvis doing his best Bruno Mars look, as should be expected. And other people had more traditional band merch, like the Austin Bibbins Dirk NSYNC shirt. it was good no matter which way your interpretation went. So
John Blake had Johnny Cash. I thought that was the best one.
Solid.
All right. Good. Oh, well, did you see Matt Hicks had the Wu-Tang Clan shirt?
Yes.
Yeah, that's also.
And Beltre had a Beatles T-shirt, and okay. I can't remember who it was, but someone commented that Beltre actually was the fifth Beatle.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, that's awesome. But other thing that's awesome is, the actual baseball is going into Houston and just dropping some wood on Friday and Saturday and then winning on Sunday.
Yeah.
And Rugi being the centerpiece of all that. I mean, we can talk a lot, and we kind of have already touched on it, about how Rugi was kind of, left for dead, sort of, and just kind of the book was closed on him. He's turned it around for a long time, and it's outside of a good stretch. It's now a good season for him, and for him to really just kind of reach his apex against Houston, knowing like who he is and how much they hate him, it just makes it just so much sweeter that he's at the center of attention.
Yeah, they really do hate that guy, like so much.
Yes, and watch him with his swagger. I knew it was just twisting the knife for those fans that were there. And it was sold out, the whole series was, so they thought they were going to be in for a treat to get to lick their chops and kick a team while they're down, but
womp womp.
We didn't get that
so
script.
Good. Yeah. So good, man. Like, Houston is such a good baseball team, and the Rangers aren't that good.
That's being very generous.
And man, just to go into Houston in front of these sold out crowds that are just like, yeah, you know, we're the true team of Texas, you know, being all ignorant and entitled as they have always been. Which, I mean, you win the World Series, you're entitled to something. But, it's just so good. So good.
Yeah, this was the third time in Major League history that a team 20 games under 500 swept a team 20 games over 500. Third time in history. The other two times were like 69 and 97. I thought that was pretty awesome.
That's pretty nice.
That's playing over your head.
So, are you telling me that the Rangers swept the Houston Astros this weekend?
I'm pretty sure they did, yeah.
No, that's not. Houston's good, and Texas is bad.
That's why they play the games.
Huh. Weird. That's strange. Huh. Wouldn't guess that. So, because Texas is really good, I'm assuming they're going to try and make some trades soon, pick up some extra talent, carry some of the promised land. No?
There's going to be some promised land seeking that maybe be a little bit deferred, unfortunately. Because what are we at? After this successful series, we have now got to within 17 games of 500, 17 games below 500. And that does not, Lady Luck does not look favorably on that. I wonder what our magic number is. Let me look that up.
That is awesome.
Dude, come on. We don't have to do this.
Our elimination number, I guess. Hang on.
We don't have to do this.
I'm sure that's coming
a lot closer.
All right, you keep talking. I'm going to find our elimination number.
Is that what we're doing now? Okay. Mike, what do you want to talk about?
Well, I have to say that my favorite game of the series was Hirato's performance yesterday. I thought he was fantastic. I mean, aside from giving up the solo home run, what was that, in the fourth? I mean, he was cruising.
And to George Springer, which, you know, like, who among us has not given up a solo home run to George Springer?
I have. Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he pitched solid, and
I actually just did.
And bullpen came in. They did their job. Ruggie had that nice play. What was that, in the seventh inning? Was that today or yesterday when he threw the guy out at the plate?
I think that was today, Sunday.
Yeah, that was today. Yeah, you're right. But, yeah, solid defense all the way around. And young guys all contributing. It's
Some IKF homers.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, all of them are doing it. Ruggie tore them apart. I mean, those pitchers must be so happy to see Ruggie leaving town, just because it was, what, 5 for 5 on Friday?
Mm-hmm. With 2 home runs and a double.
Yeah, yeah, an inside-the-park home run. And I mean,
which he pimped. He pimped that coming out of the bat.
Yes.
The thing he's doing this season where he puts his head down, drops his bat, and he looks up like halfway to the first baseline like, oh, I should run now. And
yeah.
It was great.
He turned on the afterburners, and yeah, there was no way he was not going to score.
He had a good slide there, and he had a great slide in that. Was it the 7th inning or the 8th inning that Texas rallied to put all the, like, the final runs on the board there, which really started as well?
Well, Gallo had a 3-run homer in the 9th.
Yeah, okay. Is that anyway? Because that started off with Ruggie having that hustle double where he hits it in the gap in right center and then just had a great slide coming into 2nd. Gets to 3rd, and then he scored on just a really, really good slide. I mean, Bregman had a good throw to the plate, but Ruggie got in there and beat the tag. And that was a critical potential run, which got kind of rendered moot by the whole Joey Gallo being Joey Gallo thing. But it was still a really important run to score at the time, and Ruggie went and he got it. He went and took it.
It's just seems like Lady Luck is on his side now. I mean, earlier in the season, none of that stuff was going for him. You know, he was getting caught stealing. He was, you know, the ball wasn't bouncing the right way for him, you know, in the field, making lots of errors. And now he's playing flawless defense, and he's just hitting lights out. It's so refreshing to see him actually find his groove, because you knew it was there, and it's been so long. It's been, you know, well over a season, and now he's back to being Ruggie, and that means good things are going to happen.
Mm-hmm. What's really cool is, and something that I've looked back to, because what you want when you're watching this is to know that it's real, that this isn't just a lucky stretch or a lucky half of a season or something like that. About a month ago, or maybe even more, you know, right as Ruggie started to play well, Emily Jones was telling, she was on the Ben and Skin show and was doing her segment with them and talking about Ruggie. And she said that they were having a conversation, her and Ruggie, and that he said to her, you know, hey, be on the lookout, like, it's coming. Like, I figured it out, like, the change is coming, and, like, I'm right there. It's here. You know, we're on the upswing now. And then, lo and behold, you know, since that point, the numbers show it, and the eye test shows it, is that he has figured it out, and he has, you know, he is playing to his potential. And so the fact that, like, he mentally was aware of something, and, like, obviously has made a lot of changes, and that there was a literal light switch moment is awesome. Because if it clicks and you know how to make it click, then you know how to keep it clicked. You know what I mean? And we can get good Ruggie, and I can continue to wear my Ruggie shirt in public.
I would say it was more than a light bulb going on, though. He put in a lot of extra hours in the batting cages and in the field, working on his batting, working on his defense. And those days when we had that stretch where it was like 110 degrees every day, he was out there in the middle of the afternoon fielding balls, just getting his groove back. So he put a lot of effort into this. It wasn't, to me anyway, it wasn't something that just he went aha and changed something and everything was perfect. I think he's really worked his way through this. That's solid. That's what you expect out of, you know, one of the highly paid members of the team, one of the guys you're expecting to be somewhat of a superstar later on in his career.
Yeah, it's two things that kind of pop for me. So one of them is something that you both have just mentioned there, and that's that we've been hearing for a long time now that Ruggie Odor is a really, really dedicated worker, that he's a guy who comes in and asks like good questions to try and make himself better. And I think it has clashed with a lot of fan understandings of Rougned Odor. When you watch him play, you watch his sort of his swagger, you watch his confidence. It was hard to put that together with his just incredibly putrid play last year. I think a lot of people were castigating him as somebody who lost his focus because of the money, or who, you know, got lucky for a couple of years, somebody who wasn't really willing to go in there and put that extra piece of work in, that he'd gotten to where he was because of bat speed or that crazy upper cut swing or something like that. You know, he'd gotten lucky to get to where he was. You know, he had some talent, but he wasn't going to maximize it. And so we've heard for a while from beat guys and from players that Rugi is a guy who works really hard. And I think as fans, everyone was saying, yeah, sure, everyone says that. You said that about everybody. But I don't think they did say it about everybody. They said it about Rugi. And the one that kind of stood out for me, Evan Grant had a piece where he's talking about how Odor is crediting Shinsu Chu a lot with some of his recent success, that he had a good sit-down with Chu and they kind of went over hitting. And if there's anything that Shinsu Chu has done consistently throughout his entire career, it's just straight-up hit. And he's had a couple of down years, but he's a good hitter. His power and health and running have been problems, and obviously he's a terrible defender now, but Shinsu Chu is a good, like... thanks, dog. Come on, buddy. Leave me alone for like a minute.
He's a good hitter, except ever since that on-base streak.
Yeah, let's not talk about the whole Shinsu Chu recently being bad. This is a positive episode, Mike. Shush.
Sorry.
No, but that's fair. I think it's just a bit of a cold. Everyone goes through a bad week, except for Mike Trout, who has never been bad for more than like two games at a time. But we're not going to talk about Mike Trout again. The thing that's jumping out for me is Rougned Odor hit his first home run on May 21st. That was his 10th game back from the disabled list. He was pretty atrocious in April, and then he got hurt. And then he was atrocious for his first 10 games back. He was just awful. On the 21st of May, Riggy was batting. He entered the game batting 169, 236, 231, which is incredible. Rougned Odor, yes, had an OBP higher than a slugging. It's the only time that will ever happen in Rougned Odor's entire professional career. It was pretty atrocious. He hit a home run on the 21st of May. Since the 21st of May, he's batting 303, 378, 505. It's an 883 OPS, a 137 WRC+, a 378 WOBA. He's striking at 24% of the time, and he's like blessedly walking 7.5% of the time.
Yeah, I read today on Twitter that since that point in time that you referenced, he's got the third highest ops for second baseman in Major League Baseball.
That doesn't surprise me at all. He's hit 21 extra base hits in that time, 9 home runs, a triple, 11 doubles. Like, I don't think this is actually. This might be counting today. I'm just using Fangraph's splits tool here. He did have a double today, I think. But he's been good. I mean, he has, you know, 6 caught stealing to 9 stolen bases, so bad Rugi. But
he's aggressive.
It's a really good version of Rougned Odor. Like, this is the version that we were kind of hoping we would get, is a dude who batted every once in a while. He's going to drop a 130, 140 WRC plus season. And his defense has improved, too. He had a great play at the plate today. Just nail a runner coming from third. Was that White or J.D. Davis? I think it was Tyler White who was at third. Either way, it wasn't a fast runner.
I wasn't expecting them to come home. I was expecting them to take the out at first and just...
Yeah, that's a play that... see like, the run. Your coach tells you, you go. Like, you run for home on contact. You're going to force that second baseman to make a good throw. And, I mean, Rugi took it. It was an aggressive play. I don't know that it's always what coaches would tell the second baseman to do, is make that throw home, because you might just be giving away runners on the corners and a run. But he made it, and he nailed it. It was a perfect throw, and he got the runner.
It was absolutely perfect. It was right on the glove side. I mean, it was right there at the plate. It was where it needed to be. If he put it anywhere else, the guy would have been safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know who else has been making adjustments, though? Our boy Joey Gallo.
Yes.
He walked again today. That's his 7th straight game to get a walk. So I think that's just off of his career high set last year. I think it was like 9 or 10. He's seeing pitches. He's laying off those meatballs that are, you know, at his eyeballs or down in the dirt. So that's a good thing. That the bat is still, you know, that hasn't followed along with him being more selective at the plate, but I think that's just a matter of time. I really think that we're going to see a second half resurgence just like he did last year, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, he had a rough game in terms of strikeouts a couple times this weekend. The entire team had a rough game of strikeouts today. I think I saw something that Texas struck out 19 times and won, and that's the most strikeouts for a winning team at least this season, which is
No. It went back to like a team in like the 1920s was the last time that happened.
Texas! But since the All-Star break, this is a number I brought up before, but Gallo is now up to 250, 438, 750. It's an 1188 OPS. WRC plus of over 200. Obviously, it's a tiny sample. It's just since the All-Star break. Who cares? But Joey Gallo had a great second half last year. He's having a good second half to start this season. He's walking more than he's striking out so far. Gallo's good. Everyone who's whining about Joey... Oh, that's with the 154 BABIP, by the way. Because everything's a home run.
Right.
But yeah, Joey Gallo is good. We don't need to talk about Joey Gallo. He's fine. He's going to have a great second half. I swear to everything, if we trade him to Cleveland, I will burn Arlington down. Except for your house, Mike. I will try and avoid your block. I
appreciate that. Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, that when I heard that, I guess that was on Saturday that it came out that that some teams were inquiring about Gallo, I just, my heart sank. I'm like, oh, no way. Do not do this. This is Sammy Sosa all over again. Do not make this trade. I pray they won. And I mean, I take that back. Everybody's tradable. I mean, if someone's willing to back up the prospect truck and just dump a bunch of great prospects on you, sure, I can totally see that. But I'm already invested in this guy, and he's one of my very favorite players playing right now. So they can't do that.
It would suck a whole lot. It would be really unfortunate.
And what it would mean outside of the fact that we'd be giving up on Gallo, and or I guess cashing in on him in a different way than having him wear your uniform, is it would also be a big old billboard that says, we're not going to, like, Joey Gallo would not be a part of the next winning team. You know, that's the whole thing of, like, do you trade Kella and Leclerc? Well, it's different from Diekman or Beltre because, like, they might be around here. They're under team control, and Gallo and Maz and would be under that umbrella too, Profar sort of. To me, it would be shocking because it would be, a large billboard that says over the next whatever 3 or 4 years that Gallo is under contract, we are not expecting to have to need his services because it won't matter anyways.
Yeah, and he's around for years. We've got many years of team control at Gallo, right. So it would just be. I agree with you, Mike. That sure, he's tradable, but there's not a price point that I think Texas should put on him that another team is willing to pay.
It doesn't
be very
make sense.
Odd. Yeah,
right.
Because Texas
should rightfully ask the moon for their big unicorn boy who hits 40 to 50 home runs a year, is going to have at least a league average on base, and is going to provide some base running value. And so he's been a pretty dang good right fielder the last couple weeks, in my opinion. I mean, I'm not advanced metrics eyeballs, but he looks pretty good out there. He's had some good plays.
Did you see the play he made in foul territory today?
Oh, yeah, the one where the ball came, like, back over his head and he had to readjust in the air.
Yeah, he overran it, and then he had, the last second, he had to jump back in the opposite direction and leap up. That was
a remarkable play for a dude who's, like, 6'5", 250. Like,
and has played very little right field.
Yeah.
That was probably the first time he's played right field in that stadium, wouldn't you say?
This series, I think, is the first time, yeah. He may have played left in Minute Maid, but...
Yeah, I don't think he's played right.
I don't think he's played right now.
So, yeah.
And it's a funky park this weekend because we had a ball go off the rafters there today as well. Because Mike Minor caught it on the infield, I think.
I didn't see that.
No, it was last night. Austin Bibbins-Dirks caught it. Okay. It was in the ninth inning. A ball was fouled off of one of the rafters. And Beltre and I think it was IKF was catching, came out. And neither of them made a play on it. The ball caromed over and Bibbins-Dirks caught it. And it was just a foul ball, strike two.
because of the ground rules there. I had actually never seen a ball hit off those rafters in Minute Maid, which just seems sort of weird. I didn't realize they had them sort of playable reach over the park. So it is a strange park to play in because of the dome, and you know, it's not your traditional just like playing right field out of the sky or whatever. So I was very impressed with Joey. It was a very good play. That was a difficult play anywhere, and it was a particularly difficult play when you're, you know, not used to the, you know, the vista when you're looking up. So I was quite pleased. If we're going to be talking about trades and trade packages, though, I think it's only incumbent upon us to discuss the trade that did actually already happen, which we missed by, what, was like 26 seconds?
26 seconds, man.
So just for the edification of those at home, we were joking. We hit end on our recording. We talked for about a minute after we ended our recording. And Mike, you had to get up and go somewhere. And I know Hayden, you were heading out too. And so I was just sitting here on my computer. I hadn't hung up on the call yet. And I refreshed my Twitter and I see the trade and I can hear Hayden. I know he's still on. So I just start yelling into the mic. Like, Hayden, get back here. Hayden, the thing is happening. And so he just comes back. He's like, oh, come on, man. Like, we tried. We tried so hard. But yes, Cole Hamels, that guy, all whole camels of him was traded to the Chicago Cubs, a team that still plays baseball, apparently. They didn't. I thought they would have just disbanded after the World Series, but no, they're still around.
Yep.
Still playing baseball. Still trading Rangers pitchers. So.
Oh, yeah. You know what? This is a dumb brain commentary about baseball in general.
Bring it.
Well, it's not really a dumb opinion, but it's a simpleton brain, I would say.
Lizard brain.
Theo Epstein is a great and brilliant general manager, highly successful, broke two curses, no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
If he wants to continue to do business with your team, I would assume one of two things. One is that he is a good business partner and you match up well and, you know, maybe you're in the same arena. Or two, we're all idiots and he's just getting clowned on. Right. So it's one or the other. But I'm going to take my chances on that and say that we just actually have a good working relationship with probably the best front office mind in baseball history.
And this time, we're sending the quote-unquote established pitcher and getting back talent. And you know, if these guys are scrubs, whatever. I mean, what was Cole Hamels really going to bring to Texas in 2020? 2019, yeah, sorry.
He was just going to continue to take money from the team. That's all he was going to
do. Yeah, so we were, in theory, paying him. Because we were, if we pick up the option, it's $20 million, right? So $6 million is sunk cost. It's $6 million to not bring him back. So it's like pay the man $14 million or don't. And I don't know that a $14 million Cole Hamels, on top of the six, so a $20 million Cole Hamels was going to be interesting next year. And he's going to get even less at the deadline next year than he got this year unless he pitched out of his freaking mind. In which case, we'd probably gotten stupid and said, oh, we've got an ace now. We would have traded him or some dumb crap. Because we're the Rangers and stupid things happen to us. So I was glad to see we actually pulled a trigger. We got back at least one fringe interesting prospect. We got back one in Raleigh Lacy, who has an excellent baseball name. And then
who had Eddie a good outing Butler. Today.
He did, yeah. He went, what?
Five innings, scoreless, like seven strikeouts. I think that's right, somewhere around there. It's just off the top of my head.
Five innings, two hits, three walks, seven strikeouts. So... that's his third turn in High A. He's been in the Carolina League. He was with Myrtle Beach, which was formerly the Rangers High A. He's now, of course, in Kinston with Down East. So Raleigh Lacy, he went today. We also got Eddie Butler, who pitched for Texas Saturday?
Yeah, Saturday.
Butler was once a really, really highly rated prospect in the Rockies system. He looked like he was going to be a superstar. It didn't really ever work out for Butler. He got called up, I want to say, from like A-ball is where he was pitching. And he's never really like quite recovered from it.
Mm-hmm.
2014 is when he was called up to the bigs. He spent all of 2013. He made double-A at the end of 2013. But he got called up with Colorado. It didn't really click. It never clicked. He was a guy I was actually interested in the Rangers picking up before last year, but the Cubs managed to acquire him, and he's been sort of a swing man for them. They don't really know if he's a reliever or a starter. He hasn't been especially good, but the stuff is there. He's got some pedigree. He's one of those fringe guys we've talked about on this podcast a couple of times as people we should be looking as Rangers fans for Texas to be interested in. Butler was one. The Braves have a couple, like Max Fried and other names like that. And I think we'll talk about the Barbs in a little bit. But there's always dudes like this floating around good organizations or ones that are currently good who aren't quite good enough to experiment with, but who a team like Texas absolutely should. Because if we give 12 starts to Eddie Butler in 2019 and he sucks, who cares?
Right.
Like, whatever. But if we give 30 starts to Eddie Butler next year because he's actually a starting pitcher, yay, win. Take it. Well, I take it every time. I love these sort of reclamation, high upside, former top prospects who haven't made it work in good organizations. If you couldn't pitch for the Royals, avoid. If you couldn't pitch for the Yankees, take him. We have a guy like that in Herrera, who I'm interested in seeing when he comes back from injury, which probably looks like next season. Same kind of concept.
Well, we also got a player to be named later, which a lot of people are saying that could end up being the key in this whole trade.
That dude has been traded a ton. Player to be named later is in a lot of trades. Have you ever noticed that? That guy is moving around all the time. Has he ever even made the majors? I've never seen him.
That reminds me of when I was in college. I went on a road trip with some buddies of mine, and when I'm pointed out, man, you ever notice there's a lot of frontage roads?
Ooh, frontage roads, French. Mm. Frontage.
But we also got back $5 million, and you know that's nothing to sneeze at. I look at that as five of the $6 million that we're going to have to pay him to buy him out next season. And that's just more money that can go towards your payroll in 2019, and that excites me. Just building for the future, just clearing all the old dead money out and getting ready to... I think they're just going to go lights out over the next 2 years. I don't know exactly what it's going to be, but this team is going to spin.
I hope they do. I mean, and there are a few interesting names we've gone over before in terms of... free agent pitchers. I think Patrick Corbin is probably still tops on that list. Kershaw, if he opts out. I did listen to a podcast earlier that featured a Dodgers fan vociferously arguing for Los Angeles to cut him, basically saying that he's a bum and he's always hurt argument, which, all right, but all right, I could see it. That $5 million, like you say, it's cash in the bank. It's money you can spend, and it's money that I think Texas should be looking to spend on some of these sort of, again, these like fringe guys. If Texas could make a waiver claim on a dude and spend, you know, $2.5 million on some crappy ARB 2 dude, like, say, Max Fried or Lucas Sims is another one who's also with the Braves. Chase Whitley is also with that organization. Guys who've had some chances but who have not been tolerated by teams that really can't afford to screw up two or three games here and there. You know, they can't let their Yohander Mendez come up and just eat some innings. They don't want to turn to an Ariel Jurado and say, eh, it doesn't matter, just pitch. You know, a team that says, we need every win to beat the Phillies or the Nats or, well, not the Mets. never the Mets. Sorry for any people who somehow like the Mets and listen to this podcast. That's weird. I'm sorry. But those are players that cost a couple million dollars. And if Texas has a few more millions in the bank, maybe they can try and snap some of those guys up. We've seen other teams do this, and it's occasionally it's worked out. Sometimes it's not, but sometimes it does. And I hope to see Texas get more active in that that sort of fringe market. They haven't been able to play there the last couple of years. Texas has been a very competitive team that needed to, you know, look at picking up clear improvements, and they did not really do that very much this offseason. They had a couple of these reclamation guys, Matt Moore, who we all hated, Jesse Chavez, who turned out worked out quite well. He turned into a trade for a fringe prospect. That's cool.
But we got Big Sexy. So
yeah, well, Bartolo Colon is exactly the same way. He's not one of these young guys who's on the fringes of a 40-man, but he's a dude we're paying a couple million dollars to, and you know, his ERA is up over 5 now, but he's been a serviceable pitcher. He hasn't gotten hurt. He's taken the ball every couple of days. He's been out there, and so that means we haven't had to, you know, do bullpen days, which,
right, and it's
bless us for not having to do that. Like, what if we had to have some crappy game where we were asking Diekman and Kella and Leclerc and Claude, like, everybody go out there and pitch 2 innings, and we blew somebody up? You don't know that would have happened? But we know it didn't happen, so.
Well, another great thing about Colon, this will come up because his spot in the rotation comes up, I guess, in the next couple of days before our next podcast. But did
don't
you know
say
that
it.
If he wins, that'll make him the winningest pitcher from a Latin-born country? Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah. Bartolo Colon. Is he
That's
good?
That's huge.
I mean, wow,
I,
that would
I don't
be.
Know.
You know what else is huge?
Bartolo Colon.
Luis Gohara.
Oh, yes. Let's talk about
him.
You
want to go
now.
There?
Yes.
I do. This is really cool news that came out today in Rangers land is that the Atlanta Braves has supposedly made top pitching prospect Luis Gohara available in trade talks. And now there's some dispute about this. Ken Rosenthal has said that his sources say that they're only interested in moving Gohara for controllable starting talent, which pretty much just means Chris Archer. Like, it just means Chris Archer. I guess the Mets could get done.
Yeah, I was going to say DeGrom.
Yeah, but like, DeGrom still, by the way, has more wins above replacement than pitcher wins. He had another phenomenal game like 2 days ago, and the Mets screwed it up because they're the Mets. So, Jacob DeGrom, like, pull up his stat line sometime. Jacob DeGrom is probably the second best pitcher in all of baseball. Third best. Sale, Scherzer, and DeGrom are the three best pitchers this season by a mile. And DeGrom plays for the Mets. And that's unfortunate for everyone involved.
Yep.
But the Braves are supposedly looking to move Luis, or they're willing to move Luis Gohara. Gohara is best described as a portly lefty. He's like 6'2", 6'3", 265. He looks kind of like a bowling ball. He was a bit of a fringe prospect for the Mariners. Came over in the Malik Smith trade a couple years back. Malik Smith was a super speedy outfield fringe guy with Atlanta. It was sort of a moving names around kind of trade. And then Seattle moved Malik Smith to Tampa, where he's been sort of successful. He's really fast. I like Malik Smith. He's got a cool name. Gohara really blossomed over 17, turned into a stud prospect, bit of a pop-up guy. Looks good. Pitched a couple of games down the stretch with Atlanta last year. He's had a really bad season. His numbers are terrible if you look them up. He's been injured, and he's had a family crisis. He's Brazilian. His mother lives in Brazil, and she's been really, really sick. If I remember, I think it's his mother who's been really ill.
Yeah, so I read up on this.
Back and forth all season, and it's been he had a horrible spring training that he didn't really get to play in because of her illness, and it's been really rough.
Yeah, I read about this. In the winter, his dad, they said, basically died in his arms. I don't know how he died or whatever. But then his mom also came down with a heart condition, and that's what he's been dealing with. So that's a lot for a young kid to be dealing with. Already lost one parent. You've got another one that's got a big health scare. I don't blame the kid for faltering a little bit. That's a lot to deal with.
He's a kid. He's 21. Like, he's a child.
Yeah.
So he's a really interesting player. He's left-handed, like I said. He has potential top-of-the-rotation stuff. He looks like a guy who, even if he doesn't really hit his full potential, could potentially settle in as like a middle-rotation starter. You know, like any 21-year-old lefty, he could also blow out his shoulder and never make the majors. You know, the floor here is non-existent. There is no floor for pitchers. But Gohara looks like a relatively safe bet to at least be a contributor on a major league team as either a top-end starter or as, you know, optimistically, the low end is as a middle reliever. That's a useful piece to pick up. He is much higher ranked as a prospect than I was thinking Texas could ever really be in play for. So this may never materialize. You know, Atlanta may not actually want to do Gohara for some combination of Kelly, Leclerc, Diekman, Beltre. But, man, if that's what's on the table, that's exciting. That's really, it's just even seeing that name connected is really exciting for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So before he was dealing with all the stuff that he's dealing with this year, the injuries and the stuff with his parents, last year I think he was ranked like number 23 or 24 in all of Major League Baseball for prospects.
Yeah, he's top 25 for sure.
Yeah. And he slipped to, I think MLB had him at 56 and someone else had him at like 70 for this season.
He's still a consensus.
He slipped.
Top 100 arm.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
He's and a top 100 arm is, you know, I talked about Atlanta months ago. Atlanta lines up really well. They have three stud pitching prospects. Luis Gohara has played the most in the majors entering the season. Mike Soroka debuted this season. He's hurt right now. Soroka is a big question mark. He might not pitch again this season. And then Colby Allard, if you play fantasy, take a look at Colby Allard. He should pitch this week. Should make his major league debut. Allard is probably the safest of the three. He has the lowest ceiling, but probably the highest optimistic floor. He's a good lefty. Not a big velocity guy, but not a big huge strikeout dude, but he is a very effective pitcher. Those three are all like consensus studs. any one of them being moved is probably good for Atlanta because they can't field nine starting pitchers. And it's good for a team. You know, Texas is probably willing to move multiple pieces to land a guy like O'Hara or Allard or Soroka. That lines up well. You know, Atlanta can move one controllable upper-level guy and then throw an A-ball lotto ticket. And Texas goes, this is a fair trade. We don't have a O'Hara in our system. We have nothing even remotely like a O'Hara in the system. I mean, the closest comps are either an A-ball or are deeply unfair to Luis O'Hara. Sorry, Yohander Mendez.
So gun to your head.
Apologies.
So gun to your head. Who gets traded by the deadline? How many and who?
I think Diekman and 100%. Kella are gone. Oof. I think there's so much smoke around Kella that he's not gonna stay. I've seen Kella tied to like 8 teams this week, I think. Yeah. 7 teams. It's been a ton. The Pirates are apparently in on him. The D-backs are in on him. The Dodgers are in on him. The Braves are in on him. The Indians are interested in him, which seems bizarre, but the Indians are a strange team. Like, and the Nationals were talking about it before it turns out they suck. So, like, a bunch of teams are looking at Keone Kella. He's controllable for 2 more years, so a team could, like, the Nationals could even say, screw it, maybe make a move for a guy like Keone Kella, sell Bryce Harper, and then they have fixed their bullpen in some ways the next 2 years. The Nationals have a great core, even without Bryce Harper. Like, the Nationals are not going to super suffer because they lose Bryce. Most of that team is in place for next year. They're still going to have Rendon. They're going to have Turner. They're going to have Scherzer, Strasburg, Doolittle, Herrera, Kella, if they trade for him, like that kind of stuff. Like, yeah. There are a lot of teams that are in play. Kella's got way too much smoke to not go. And Texas has to look at the fact that they probably only have 2 years control. And what if he blows up? Like, he's a great closer, and I'd love to keep him. I really like Keone Kella. He's really fun to root for. I've loved him since he came up. I love the fact that he is willing to stab people for his teammates, and that it's really obvious that he will, like, kill a person.
Yep.
But, hey, this is what you do with these kind of guys, and I'll root for him wherever he goes. I'll pull for him on another team. That's fine.
Yeah. I think he's got for me, it's a lot different. We were talking about Gallo earlier, you know, trading a guy that is still going to be in his window when you're competing for a title. With relievers, to me, I don't trust any of them, because from 1 year to the next, they go from being great to being awful. And and so it doesn't bother me that if you can capitalize on a young kid like that with a great arm and get a starting pitcher in return, or, you know, a really solid positional player, I'm in.
And I kind of feel like I'm gonna do this thing I hate to do, which is psychoanalyze players. I'm gonna couch armchair this thing here. Keone Kella seems like the kind of guy who, if he goes as the headliner in a big trade, is going to pitch out of his frickin' head. Like, I don't know what it is that I'm making me think this, but Keone Kella seems the kind of guy who's like, yeah, I'm worth it, and you know, I'm going to prove it. Like, he's going to come out there and just sit 101 for an inning or something like that, just be like, yeah, I was worth this. I'm worth all the top prospects.
See, and I think he's the exact opposite.
You think he'd be, like, hurt if he got traded?
No. I'm just saying, I don't know how well he does in specific pressure situations. Yes, he's converted 24 of 25 saves, and I get that, including today. But he kind of had a meltdown today. I mean, they really could have lost that game. And I think it was because he knew that there were probably a dozen scouts there watching him pitch. That's the way I viewed it. Just
every pitcher has their, like Archie Bradley, a big bearded dingus with Arizona. He gave up like 7 runs in an inning a couple of days ago, and Archie Bradley's fantastic. Do y'all remember that time that Texas fans wanted to trade Jurickson Profar for Archie Bradley? Well, that would have been cool. Anyway, but like, yeah, I'm pulling up right here. Bradley gave up like a billion runs. Just, there it is. 6 runs with 2 outs. He walked 3 hits, dinger. The 2 outs were both strikeouts, which is an incredibly Archie Bradley line. It just happens. Like, relievers are going to blow up every once in a while. All pitchers have a bad inning here and there. Starters can at least paper over the fact that they go, you know, 5 to 7 innings a time. I think Keone Kella is a guy who maybe could get excited about being traded because it kind of validates everything about him. And I want to see him just pitch mad in situations that matter. And that's not going to happen for Texas right now. And it probably isn't going to happen next year. And angry Keone Kella just knocking dudes out, in the 7th, 8th, or 9th innings, I'm very much for it, and I want to see it. So I think he's gone. Diekman has to be gone. I think Texas ends up holding on to Leclerc. Yeah. I think they're gonna unless we get blown away, which, man, I hope that happens. But I think Texas ends up holding on to Leclerc. Beltre's a hard one, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, that's the hardest one in every sense of the word.
Yeah.
I think if I have... You said gun to my head, so thank you for threatening me on the internet, Mike.
Reported.
Yeah, firearm to my face. If I'm out here making a position, I think Adrian Beltre is traded, and I think he's going to be an Atlanta Brave. I think the Braves have a reason to bring him on. Ozzie Albies is just coming off of a hamstring tweak. He ended up not going on the DL, but he maybe should have. I think they're going to want to try and baby him a little bit down the stretch. I mean, we're talking about a bunch of young kids who just haven't played like that much baseball in a season. So I'm pulling up Ozzie Albies here. This is really great radio. Albies played 57 games last year in the bigs. The most games he's ever played in the season was 138 in 2016. Yeah, this is a guy who, because they're young, they haven't played 170 games. They haven't done a full season and then played playoffs before. I think they're going to want to try and rest Albies. Dansby Swanson kind of sucks, and they're going to want to get Johan Camargo in the lineup, which is a very strange thing to say in 2018. You want to get Johan Camargo's bat in your lineup? That's weird. But they're going to want to rest Freddie Freeman, too. There's going to be games they're not going to need to win. And if they can let somebody play first base, great. I think they're a team that can actually afford to let Beltre sit every once in a while as they rotate a couple of guys that last little month. I think they've got that youth movement going on, and they want to bring in an older head like Adrian. And Beltre's been very good. He's a good hitter. And I think his limited 2018 power, just from what I've seen, I've been to SunTrust Park a couple of times. It's the area that I live in, so I try to go to Braves games. I want him there so I can go see him. But I think his power is going to play just fine in SunTrust, and I think they'd really like having him on that roster, and I think he makes sense as a package deal.
There's only one thing you said that that I was like, I'm not so sure about that. You said...
Was it Johan Camargo's bat? I mean,
No. No. It was that they can rest him here and there. You said something to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
Beltre came out over the weekend. One of the things that he did say was, if he's going to accept a trade, it's not going to be ceremonial. He's not going to be the old guy on the bench.
He said,
I want to be actively contributing to the World Series. You know, I mean, so he's going to be very selective.
Yeah. I saw that too. And actually, that's why I think the Braves make a lot of sense. And that the Braves are not going to go, you know, you're just here. The Braves are going to say, you're part of a group of guys, and we are kind of moving some of these at-bats around because these are kids, and they can't play every day too. And you're 40, and you can't, or 39, and you can't play every day too. Like, that's a team that I think he can step in right now, and it's not like kid gloves. We're trying to baby your hamstrings through here and just like Carlos Beltran you with the Astros last year to the title, where he just got carried along in a hand cart. I think he makes sense with the Braves because that's a team that has a couple of guys that need to move around a little bit in the infield just to make sure they're not getting blown out in September. So he has easy routes to at-bats, but they're also going to be routinely resting other middle infielders. So okay. It's not like Beltre is the weird guy, like, oh, we can't play him every day because he's old. They're like, we don't want to play Ozzie Albies every day too because he might have a screwed up hamstring. Yeah, we can't play Dansby every day because he sucks. Sorry, Dansby Swanson. Like, we don't want to play Johan Camargo every day because, I don't know, it's Johan Camargo. Like, they want to move these guys around a little bit. I think he actually works in really well because he's going to be able to, like, sit down and tell these guys, like, you don't get to play every day sometimes. Sometimes you got to do what's best for the team. I think it actually works really well. And I think they're going to value that sort of old man leadershiping in there. It's a very young squad. It's just going to be, I mean, their only over 30 starters would be Beltre and Nick Markakis. Oh, no, Kurt Suzuki's old, right?
Yeah.
But he's Kurt Suzuki.
He's going to turn into a pumpkin if he hasn't already. I mean, he's
Suzuki and Flowers have been good for like 2 years now. Like, don't look it up, but they've been actually really good. Like, for a while.
I already typed in KURT, so I'm already
looking it up. No, Kurt Suzuki, he's got a, like, yeah, it's a 110 OPS plus. And Flowers is at a 102.
Hey,
like, they've just blossomed into good hitters late career. Anyways, the leadership on this team is like 28-year-old Freddie Freeman. And I love Freddie Freeman, but...
Right.
He's...
Well, and we saw with the Astros back in 15 and 16. Just kind of, you know, what happens if I mean, a lot of things go into that cocktail of failure, but I think 2015 you can attribute completely to the lack of leadership on that team. They were too good, and they were too far ahead of the Rangers to collapse like they did. And that's and I am proven right by that because they went out and signed Carlos Beltran and other players like that.
I would. I think I would normally disagree with you that I don't think that's this stuff like matters that much. But that Astros team or those Astros teams. You're right. I think they really do kind of prove it. Like, that's something I kept saying with the Astros. It just seems like there's something wonky in here. Like, they're just losing focus, and that you wouldn't expect to see them lose focus this way. And maybe we're both just full of it, and this isn't a thing. But if it's not a thing, why do teams talk so much about this kind of stuff? It's constant, that clubhouse presence. And Beltre has never gotten anything but glowing remarks from folks. I think teams are legitimately interested in acquiring that, and the fact that he's still good helps, and his defense is excellent, and the Braves left side of their infield has been rough. Swanson is kind of up and down, and Johan Camargo is not a stud third baseman. I'm gonna say this again, he's Johan Camargo. Like, other than the one guy, you know who you are, who listens to this podcast, does anybody know who Johan Camargo is? Like, for real, I would be fascinated to find out. So,
yeah.
I think Beltran makes a ton of sense. I think he makes a lot of sense. And he won't have to shave. So, screw you, Yankees.
Yeah.
Get.
That's not going to happen, I don't think. But, oh, man. I said this before. I don't know if I actually said this when we recorded it. I would doubt it because it was kind of after the fact of the Cole Hamels trade when I was feeling it. But seeing the pictures of him in the dugout and like there he goes, and then hearing reports that, you know, he's cleared out his locker, and just that kind of imagery of kind of the how it's real when somebody leaves, you know, and it's permanent. Just attributing those same kinds of things and those images to Beltre was really tough for me to kind of even mentally dip my toe in. Like, oh, there's Beltre getting pulled from the game. There's Beltre going down underneath the tunnel into the clubhouse.
You're gonna make me cry. Like 11
o'clock on a Sunday. To make that real, I mean, gosh,
it's gonna suck.
Like, I want him to go win, and I want the Rangers to be better, and both of those probably involve him leaving. But I don't want to. I don't want to do it.
I don't want to. See, this is my thing, because for once I have the advantage here in terms of physical proximity.
Yeah.
So if he does go to the Braves, I can just drive 3.5 hours and see it. And I will.
Yeah, especially if it's the playoffs, you have to do it.
Atlanta, if you're listening, I will buy tickets.
Oh, man, well, you're going to make it.
Spend those money dollars.
Worth their while.
I'll have to fight for it, man. Braves tickets are getting pricey. Unlike Rangers tickets, apparently.
Oh yeah, trending opposite direction. Good, good point though. I'm gonna be at the games this weekend to get the two bobbleheads, and Mike should be over there as well.
When's it, Ted Williams, right? Or is that next weekend?
It's Ted Williams' first manager is on Sunday, and then the Vlad bobblehead Hall of Fame is on Saturday. So cool. I'm gonna be at both of those games.
And they're actually they're gonna have another giveaway on Friday night. It's an Eric Nadel 40th anniversary with the team microphone.
Oh neat.
And I saw a commercial about it today, but I was on my phone. I think 40.
Wow, that's nice.
I was on my phone, so I wasn't paying total attention. But I think it like has some of his patented sayings, like you can press a button and hear him say,
"Awesome,
yeah, that one is history."
That ball is
history.
Yeah.
Yeah, that ball is history. Oh man, I'm getting.
So
let me
go to that one too. Again. We'll see.
Okay. Yeah. So
should be fun.
You can tweet at us, and maybe we'll bump into you or whatever. Thanks for listening, people. Probably about it.
Appreciate it.
That's probably about all we got today, huh?
Mm-hmm.
We got a very entertaining 30 hours-ish from the time that you're listening to this.
Yep. So by the time you hear this is all irrelevant, because Texas will have traded a bunch of dudes to, like, the Padres, and we're all going to look like morons.
Yeah, we're going to have a midnight trade, and it's going to be awful.
Yeah, the Texas Rangers traded Joey Gallo to, like, the Toronto Blue Jays, and we all just have an aneurysm, and we never record again. So, I don't know.
Just thank God we can't trade Carlos Tochi.
We can. You can trade a Rule 5 guy.
You can?
Yeah.
Sure.
Absolutely.
I thought you'd have to offer him back to the team you got him from first.
You can, only if you option him. You can trade him. Like, right. A Rule 5 pick got traded just a couple years ago.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, that's got something else to keep me up at night.
Carlos Tochi. Carlos Tochi. He's going to the Braves. The Braves. Oh, maybe we can pretend that he's a really good center fielder to back up Ender. We're like, yeah, you want this guy, Tochi. Yeah, he's great. He's so good.
Like, glove first guy. And glove just don't first. Even mention that he's a bat zero.
He's an elite defender for the playoff run. Yeah. You ever see that golf sign thing? Yeah, he can play right field.
Oh, we're done.
Triggered!
We are done.
See y'all on Thursday.
Yeah, we'll see you later.